Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. Steeple might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
Welcome, everybody, to your latest episode of Wolves Fancast, reviewing the victory over Watford. We're off the mark. We're on the score sheet, and we finally got 3 points to mark the real kickoff of the Bruno Lage era. Now, I've got Luke and Matt with me today. First of all, boys, how good a feeling was it just to get that 3 points on the board? Luke, I'll start with you.
Yeah, it's good. Hopefully, you know, it's going to give the lads a bit of confidence, and you don't want to, you could sense the negativity creeping in a little bit with the fan base, you know, and we haven't won in three, we haven't scored, what's going on, this, that and the other. So just to end that now, we're off the board, the season can start officially from yesterday, Saturday, if you're listening on Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah, Matt.
Or any other time of the week.
Was it a sense of relief or joy or what when the vinyl whistle blew for you?
Relief. Yeah. Sorry, Luke. Relief from my point of view. Luke, what about you?
Joy. Just happy to get back to winning ways. It's been a while. Would it have been 6 or 7 without a win in the league? I mean, sorry, beaten in the league.
Overlapping into last season, I think. Yeah, we didn't win any of the last three, I believe, and. Yeah, three defeats on the bounce. We'll go into more depth, obviously, later on in the podcast. But just that winning feeling again, you can't really beat it. Now, I don't know if either of you went to the game or not. Were you there?
Sadly, not for me. No, it was finding some other fruitful means of finding it and avoiding the Ronaldo show.
I don't know about you, but I feel like Ronaldo broke the internet on Saturday because I struggled to catch the full 90 minutes by whatever means that I tend to do. So did any of you experience any trouble with that?
What was your thoughts on the whole Ronaldo thing?
The Ronaldo thing? I'm sick to death of it already. Like,
why?
Genuinely.
Are you not happy? For the man,
why would I be happy about that? Like, I don't understand what I'm supposed to be happy about.
It's a great story, mate.
So is, you know, Francisco Sierralta, you know, nodding one in for Wolves. You know, I was genuinely really excited about that, to be honest. First goal of the Premier League era for Bruno Lage. So
I'm glad it didn't finish 1-0 though yesterday, because if our top goal scorer was OG.
we'd still be whinging, wouldn't we? We would 100% still be whinging about it. But if we go back to the start of the game, when the lineups were announced, nothing new there with regards to the starting 11. But when you look at that bench, gents, what do you? It's pretty tasty, isn't it?
It's a strong bench.
Out of nowhere, yeah. Kind of out of nowhere when we've been kind of pulling our face at some of the benches we've had over the last kind of 7 or 8 Premier League fixtures going into the back end of last season. You were sniffing that at it, really. But looking at that now, it's chocker full of experience in the Premier League from players that we've already had, and then some exciting talent that, you know, that we've brought in as well. So out of nowhere, especially considering the absolute fury about the transfer window, it makes for pleasant reading.
Obviously, a first glance at Juan Ki-chan and Yeson Mosquera being in the matchday squad. Juan obviously being able to make a real impact on this occasion. Mosquera Well, you wouldn't really expect, I suppose, a centre half to come on, but it bodes quite well. And having ended the transfer window on quite a low point, maybe a chance to just reflect and think, you know what, maybe we're not in such bad shape, Luke.
I think you've got some good options off the bench as well, and that's the key for me. I mean, if we're chasing a game and we need a goal, we need to maybe change it up front. You've got Huang. How do you say his name? Huang. You've got Huang and Pedenza who can come off, change it. If you need to add a bit of physicality off set pieces, defending and attacking, you've got Dendonka. Two decent lads at centre-half as well, if it's not quite working there. And you've got completely different options at full-back. Without Nuri to Marcel, you've got a bit more pace, a bit more skill, trickery, directness going forward. So I like the options. I mean, because we're not limited now.
The big talking point, obviously, quite close to pre-game was the availability of Jimenez and how important that was going to be. And Watford had their own concerns over Sierra, who was obviously key to the fixture as well. And I think when you saw what happened to Tottenham and Villa over the weekend, who were obviously unable to field their Argentinian contingent, hindsight is a wonderful thing, but clearly we made a real good decision to kind of put our foot down and then kiss and make up with a Mexican FA, didn't we?
At first, I was quite vocal amongst my friends and anybody that would listen at work that I didn't think it would be the worst thing in the world if Jimenez had missed the fixture purely, well, from a couple of reasons, really. A, from a headspace point of view, he's being asked a lot of immediately after not just a career-threatening, but a life-threatening injury. So to give himself some headspace, a bit of time away from the on-field side of the game, to be able to just not have that mounting pressure, because every minute that he doesn't score, it builds that pressure. And it also would give Huang Hee-chan minutes immediately off the bat if he was to be played in that striker position, or give Fabio some, a start. But it's a nice problem to have, really, because if you do have him on the pitch, you've got the benefit of having a soon-to-be, again, world-class striker.
Off the back of what you just said there, Matt, Luke, do you think, recent times, it's always been, oh, shit, what if Raul got injured? It's always been that absolute fear, which we've probably got with Ruben Neves, I suggest, now, in a slightly different position. But do you not worry so much anymore about the fact that Raul might have to miss a game here or there? Or
the reason I wouldn't worry is I think he's had a slow start coming back. As Matt said, not just a career-threatening injury, a life-threatening injury. He's coming back from something major. But how long do we sort of wait for him to fire on all cylinders again? Like yesterday, and possibly against Man United as well, I would have liked to have seen Silva given a run of maybe 20 minutes and see what he can bring in case we do lose Raul again for whatever reason. And also, I kind of feel bad for saying it, but I don't think his performances have been that good. And I think in most games, me personally, he's probably the one change I would have looked to have made from an attacking option.
I mean, I appreciate 100% that he has had a life-threatening situation with his injury and stuff, but I can't imagine Raul sitting there feeling sorry for himself and thinking that he's doing okay and all that kind of thing. He's probably beating himself up a little bit about the fact that he's not necessarily getting too many chances in games or not have really had too much of a sniff of goal at this point. I mean, there was the header off the Moutinho free kick, you know what? If he puts that in the top corner, maybe pre-headband, you wonder if he had it done. But then you really feel like Raul's back if that goes in, don't you?
But I think the fact that he carved that chance out, though, suggests it's more of a when, not if. Yeah. That he's hungry for it, and it's going to be the case. Much like how I felt prior to the game, that bottle is fizzed up to the point now where it's going to explode one way or the other, and a goal would have just turn the cap just that little bit, let a bit of that pressure off, and he'd have been, you know, ready to go. I mean, let's not forget he did, and I'm sure we'll discuss it at length, but he did create a number of chances for some of our less clinical players to eventually fluff. So
yeah.
You know, it's not all,
and that's
not
that's all as much it. That's as much part of his job as actually getting on the end of things, I suppose, isn't it? But if we talk about the first half and the way it went, I mean, it felt like there was a little bit of pressure on getting a result here, and I don't know if maybe the slightly different challenge that Watford set us in the sense that they weren't going to necessarily come out and be too open. Did it feel like we struggled a little bit maybe at times in that first half to create something, Luke, to you?
But I don't think either team created too much on a whole. It was sort of one of those games where probably just lacking a little bit of quality and decision-making in the final third from both teams. But I think when you go away from home in the Premier League, you can't expect to have the whole game go your way for the full 90 minutes. You know, you've got to expect to come under some pressure at home at some point of the game. Doesn't matter if the bottom of the league or top of the league. So I think we managed the game really well, if I'm being honest. If you want to focus on the first half, you know, I still think you can walk away and say, that's not a bad first half performance. That's not. It might not have been as good as Tottenham or Manchester United, but it was certainly better than Leicester first half. And it was better than, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it was better than 35 out of the 38 first halves we had last season. So that's progress.
And yet we still didn't fancy scoring a goal in the first half, though, did we? That's just ingrained in us now, isn't it?
It's just a bit off. but we had some decent chances, right? Trinko's shot was a bit tame, but the Semedo chance, that's a big chance, that is.
Yeah. No, it is 100%. And good to still see that we are able to get into those positions, you know, regardless of the fact that Watford weren't necessarily as open, like I say, as maybe Spurs or Man United were. But I mean, in my intermittent stream, I managed to kind of catch probably one issue I think we've got, which was down our left-hand side. Now, Ismaïla Sarr is their standout player at Watford. He is a good player, to be fair to him. But it did feel a little bit like Saïss and Marcel a bit over-eager to go and challenge him, I think, maybe. They got sucked in and beaten.
They're over-eager to challenge their own nan in the back garden, them two, Amlo, aren't they?
I've put it politely, to be honest. But, Matt, does that concern you at all?
It concerns me in the fact that we look like we could be split open down that side easily, but I do think that's a byproduct of wanting to be aggressive and pressing as much as Lars wants us to do. And I think what that allows you, if you're the recipient of a counter attack like that, and all of a sudden you can win that ball, you've already got the beating of the three or four men that have already sprinted up the pitch to try and create the counter attack from the opposition. So I think the risk isn't as bad as the reward in that scenario. What concerns me slightly is neither Marcel or Saïss are known for their pace. I'm a poet and I didn't know it. If that was Nouri, it might be a slightly different story because he's got a bit more pace to combat if we're going to be sucked into those battles. But at the same time, Marcel, for someone who we've all said is made out of snackerjacks, he's done fantastically well in that position to kind of maintain his place at the moment. So it's a hard one, really, because you know, other teams will expose us in that area if they can see it can be done. But, you know, there aren't many players on the flip side to that, like Sarr, that has the pace that Sarr has either. So it's a tough one.
Yeah.
I think Bolly might change that, though.
Yeah.
So I don't think that change is too far away. I think Saïss might have one, two games left until Bolly's back in. And then I think we look like a different team if we get sort of Championship first season, Premier League Willy Bolly, and not last season's Willy Bolly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I want to delve a little bit deeper into the defence as a whole a little bit later on. But I think yeah, you're right in what you're saying, that you expect, because, you know, our standout individual as a centre half is probably still not quite back at it yet. But you mentioned the Semedo chance in that first half. Did it feel like a bit of Groundhog Day in the sense that obviously it wasn't Traore that was in that position, but chances fall into not necessarily the players you want them to?
You want Raul on that, don't you?
I can't ever remember him going through one-on-one and scoring a goal, though, either.
Well, yeah.
Partly because we never seem to get into those positions under Nuno.
And he seems quite an instinctive striker as well. A lot of snapshots and sometimes having shots when you're not expecting him to. But it's on the one side, it's very, very good and very, very promising and very, very positive that we're getting into those positions in the first place, because it's a dangerous position and a big, big chance. But when he misses, you are just sitting there, you're thinking, fuck's sake, we just ain't going to score, are we? It's never going to happen. But I'd love Semedo to get a goal as well. I think he deserves it. I think he gets a lot of harsh criticism, which is a bit over the top.
Yeah, yeah, of course. I mean, if we kind of segue into the second half now, yeah, it was deja vu, because he then had another chance going through one-on-one. And, you know, it looks like a ploy to actually get him into those kind of positions, I think, from what I saw. I mean, I'll talk probably a little bit more in depth on GTA this week about this, but Traore, when he switched over to the right flank, was holding the width, and Semedo was then allowed to make the runs inside of him, and that's what led to the really lovely flick from Raul and Semedo going through again. I think the second one was a bit easier because he wasn't quite as close to the keeper. But like you say, great news that we're creating the chances, Matt, but at that point, he's still...
It is, and you know, we've been burnt in the past by having a striking philosophy that relies on one player, so the goals have to be spread amongst the team. It's just unfortunate that those chances have both fell to Semedo and he's fluffed both of them, if we're honest. But I think the positives of us creating the chances outweigh the negatives of us not finishing them because of our now attacking prowess that we have up front. I mean, the options now that we have are absolutely ridiculous in terms of if something isn't working, we can change it up. And I think, you know, I'm not saying you can teach finishing and someone can be a class finisher overnight, but to have the natural ability to create that position and get in that position and want to be there, I think is more important than being able to finish it, because more can be done on the training pitch, I think, with that. And, you know, it's just another one of those, not the curse, but it's as much mental as it is technical, I think, for a lot of the players on the pitch at the moment. And that win will have been huge, absolutely huge. Have meant more than, I dare say, from a mental point of view, it will have meant more of some of the real glamour wins that we've had over the last kind of 3 to 4 years, because it's just that duck's broken and now we can crack on. And then actually, on the back of that result, you look at the fixtures ahead and you're thinking, yes, I fancy a bit of that now.
Mm-hmm. It does look like a kind run. But I think second half in this game, we really kind of took charge of it from what I saw after the break. And now we needed a bit of a helping hand for that first goal. I think Miles Jacobson, when he previewed the game with us, mentioned Sierra Alta as a big player for Watford. And they were really hoping that he would come through. He'd been away with Chile. And thankfully for them and for us, he was able to make the game, and we needed a bit of assistance. But I feel like we're going to have this slight issue where scoring the first goal is going to be really, really important for us. And once they do get those in games, maybe that's when floodgates will start to open a little bit.
Yeah, there's an element of that. And I think it's the case that we obviously favour a team now that is going to come on to us, and we get the opportunity then to overload them. And that's what was so disappointing about Manchester United when we played them, is that they were so tepid that it almost was our disadvantage. Well, that might have been tactical. I might be giving Ole a bit of a bad rep there. But if we can score the first goal in games, you've got to then think to yourself, well, this could be 2 or 3, because we're going to have the opportunity now to overload when people are pushing players onto us, and it's going to end up in a good result. But it's not been just a Bruno problem. It's been a Nuno problem scoring the first goal. So there's something a little bit more from a philosophy point of view that needs changing, I think.
Yeah.
Something that's just a Bruno Lage problem.
Luca, are you a fan of short corners?
No, I'm not, but it works. I was yesterday in the 74th minute. I was a huge fan of short
corners. Look at you. It's changed like the wind you do, don't you?
I'm old school, man. Let's just get it in the mixer. Come on, get it in the mixer. Make first contact.
I do think, from what I've seen, though, they seem to change it up every single corner that they have. They won't put two in, you know, one after the other if they have some in quick succession. Because they, just prior to that, I think Moutinho took one. Raul flicked it on at the near post and they managed to clear it. Then the ball comes back across and we get the second corner. And I don't get the hatred for short corners. There seems to be a proper vendetta against them. And yet, against Forest, the first goal came from one. Very similar, but on the right-hand side when Herve put the ball in for Sace. And this time around, Marcel, nice delivery as well. Really kind of dangerous. I mean, yes, he could have clearly dealt with it better. But when you're putting them in that kind of pressure, you're going to ask questions of them and he failed to answer on this occasion.
I think, you know, the corner traditionally is a small reward for a piece of good play. Like, guys have a corner, everybody cheers, everybody applauds. And then when it's played in a short corner and then it's passed further back and then it's passed further back and then a chance isn't created, it's just a bit of a wet fart, isn't it, sometimes when it happens. I mean, our deliveries, whether they were short corners or being whipped in last season, were pretty atrocious anyway, so I don't think it really made a blind bit of difference. But to quote a football cliche, it's a results-driven business. And if we're getting results from short corners, then long live the short corner.
But if you look deep into it, the percentage of goals that actually result from corners is quite laughable, how excited we actually get about them.
Yeah. Isn't it something ridiculous, like 3% or...
It's something stupid like that. It's a total fallacy that, you know, we should be really hyped for it.
I mean, but you can't tell me you don't love the hype that's created when you're drawing a game or you're losing and you're looking for the equaliser or a late winner. You get a corner in the 94th minute and everyone just goes mental.
Nah, Luke, this is me telling you. Sit your ass down. Sit your ass down and cross your arms and don't worry about it. You're just going to be disappointed because it ain't going to beat the first man.
Especially when you're away from home and the corner's right in front of the away fans in the corner. Mate, you know that's a fucking brilliant feeling, and that is why we love corners.
Oh my god, this is quite interesting, actually. Luke loves corners. This is going to be a pod title, I'm sure. But like I say, I mean, going 1-0 up, it sounds obvious to say, but it feels like it's going to be more important to us than many teams. And I think we freed ourselves up a little bit from there on. Now, prior to the first goal, we had made one change. Now, to get hold of the second goal, another change came about. So the two forwards, Traore and Trincao, who had by no means had a bad game at all, were changed. And we just had something different with Hwang and Pedence coming on into those positions. And yeah, you know, how exciting is it to have that variety up front, Matt?
It's serious
options.
It does, because, and I'll tell you for why, because last year under Commander Handbrake, as Stu called him, not a direct quote from myself before I get a myriad of hate on my social media, a change in last season felt like a random roll of the dice. This season it feels like there's reasoning behind a change and it feels like there's something more about it and there's more to be excited about, because I feel like every player's got a lift. We've only got to look at the performances of Neves over the last four games to know that there's something's clicking differently. And what options that we have now in attack means we can change a game up completely. We don't have to be reliant on Traore barging past three men anymore. We don't have to rely on that left foot of Trincao, which seems to be just attracting the ball like a magnet. Like, there are just genuine different ways we can mix things up, and it's really, really exciting. And I'm so pleased it was Potence that created the chance yesterday, because it's justification, if anything. It's justification for the way we're playing, and it's exciting, and it's just we won't be as predictable and not route one, but it's not Traore or bust anymore, and that competition brings out the best in everyone.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was Hwang that got the goal in the end, nice and scruffy. You got to love one of them. But what are your initial thoughts, Luke, on his performance? I mean, he had half an hour. He wasn't necessarily involved throughout, but I mean, every time I look at him, I just think, bloody hell, he's pretty well built, isn't he, for a start?
Yeah, he's athletic. He looks quick. Good ball control. Like you said, he didn't really get too involved yesterday, so it's hard to sort of make too much of a judgment on him off yesterday's basis. But it looks like he can bring something, and he can add something as well. He looks like he's got a good work rate, which always helps. And again, for him to get a goal on your debut, it just makes you settle so much better. You know, he can relax now. He's the man in training on Monday when, you know, the new boy's coming in and he scored a goal on the weekend. So yeah, it should hopefully help him settle a lot easier. I just want to touch on Matt saying how exciting it is with the attacking options. But the best is still yet to come, boys.
Oh, yeah.
We've still got Neto to come back as well. And he is... I love our attacking players, but Neto is something else.
I mean, it's a nice problem to have, but then, you know, who's making the bench even sometimes? It could be to that extent that you got to leave one out. And I'd hate to be the guy making those decisions, because I'm sure they're all, you know, macho, testosterone-filled blokes who, you know, want to be on the pitch every minute of every game. You know, we all know how Pedence can have a little tantrum here and there on Instagram, so I can't imagine what he's like when he's not starting games and things. And,
well,
it's a bit of a man management task, then, isn't it?
Well, this is it. As reported by the Fancast, obviously we know he's out for some time. And when it comes into January, if we splash out on a defender, and then maybe it's the case that we move into a four at the back and we have an extra player up front or creatively up front, then in some bizarre Frankenstein experiment, we end up with Neto and Traore and Trincao and Raul on the pitch at the same time.
Bloody hell.
Mate, get rid of tissues, mate. I'm spunking really over this. This is unbelievable. Do you know what I mean? I mean, Matt, just picture it for a moment in your head, how exciting that's going to be. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, that is
a fucking league title there. FA Cup, League Cup, the lot.
That is a frightening prospect. That is a frightening prospect. But I do just want to give a bit of a shout out for the boys at the back as well. Mm-hmm. Now, we all spoke about, especially the three that have played all the games so far, as being potential liabilities. Sace, Cody, and Max Kilman have all been through the mill over the summer, in the sense that nobody's really given them any kind of confidence and or backing whatsoever. And yet we're sat here. I mean, in the XG table, we're fourth this season. The three game, we've basically won every single game we've played on XG. That doesn't just happen because we're creating chances. That happens because we're restricting chances. And Watford, apart from probably Josh, I mean, you can't even count it as a chance because they didn't connect with the ball, but Josh King flashing across the goal in the first half. I don't recall a significant Watford chance in that game.
No. I just...
Did Sarr make a save?
One from Sissoko, I think, from the... But it wasn't a good chance. You wouldn't call it a chance, I don't think.
I just want to sort of speak about one man who I've spoke poorly of in the past. But Max Kilman, some boy, he's started this season really well. And he's made myself, and I'm sure a hell of a lot of people, sort of eat a little bit of humble pie.
Because I mean, if we'd have brought Max Kilman in during this summer, mm-hmm. and he'd started these four games, and he'd come from, I don't know, Lille. He just won the title with Lille, and he'd brought him in. We'd all be absolutely, you know, patting ourselves on the back on a good piece of business, wouldn't we?
Like, we fucking hell, 25 million for him, that's a bargain.
But you know, there's a reason why people like myself, who aren't Football Manager connoisseurs, pretty much skip to a transfer window as quickly as humanly possible, because that's the most exciting thing, and getting the transfers in are the some of the exciting parts of football. And I think we as football fans are just, that's just what we want. We want to be the headlines on transfer deadline day, or we want to do that. So I think our need and urge to bring in a transfer sometimes outweighs our, or clouds our vision of actually what we actually already got. And I think actually we should be really, really pleased that Kilman is proving a lot of us wrong. And it's only to our benefit, really. I think, unfortunately, progress has to make way, you know, at the behest of sentiment sometimes. And Sace will be the one who eventually makes way for whoever we bring in. And he's been a fantastic servant to the club so far, and I hope in some capacity we can still find a home for him and find a position for him. But
fucking hell, good Matt, you're speaking like he's coming to the end of his life. He's got dementia.
There's no sentiment for it, though. Sad times, unfortunately. He's got to, like, you know,
take it round the back and shoot him.
Roman, old yellow says.
Bloody hell. I tell you what, he'd grab that gun and he'd turn it on you. That's what he's going to do. Yeah. That
nothing. I hope he doesn't know where I live.
I mean, he just survived a military coup, didn't he?
That's it. Well, maybe that's a new line for him, going into, you know, being mercenary over in Sierra Leone or something. I don't know.
The new face of, like, the next Assassin's Creed game or something like that. That'd be brilliant. We figured out that the defence is great, the attack is brilliant. Semedo and Marcel, as it happens, were our two second and third highest XG as individuals in the game yesterday.
I bet they'll still give him 6 out of 10 in the Express and Star, though. Fuck me. What's the boy got to do?
And the past it, the couldn't work together central midfield of Neves and Moutinho were in total charge. So what's happened to us, boys? What where's all this come from?
We got rid of it. Happened, mate.
You know what's so depressing, though? Christ. People talking about the old man Moutinho, who's 35, and I think to myself, Christ, what are they going to call me when I'm 35? I've got to look like I've had a tough paper round as it is. So, like, to be in his, like, prime...
Not going
to
disagree with you there, Matt.
I know, mate. To be in his kind of prime physical shape at 35, and he's the old man of the squad, it just shows how, you know...
Do you know what? When he's lining up that free kick, and they're zoomed in on his face and he's giving it the whole focus and all that kind of stuff, I thought, he's a good looking bastard, isn't he?
Yeah.
Fuck me.
Fair.
Yeah. But I mean,
still needs replacing.
Slightly loaded question though, Luke, here for you. Are we a bit quick to write people off in the Wolverhampton Wanderers fan base?
No, do you know what the problem is? We get too excited over one or two decent games. That's the problem. It's nothing to do with me. But no, obviously, long term, we've got to look into it. It's a long old season as well. It's all right. Believe it or not, I'm actually older than Moutinho by a couple of months.
I would never have had that.
And it's all right in the summer. It's all fun and games when the sun's shining and the birds are still chirping.
Are you going to give it the whole, you can't do it on a wet, cold Tuesday night?
I am. But when it's -3 and we mean fucking Burnley on a Tuesday night, and he's coming out of some wooden, some changing rooms that are made of wood, will he do all right? He's going to need resting. If we can get 38 games out of him this season, if we can get 33 games out of him this season, playing at this level,
in theory, we shouldn't be doing that with anyone, really, should we? That's your centre half pairing is probably what you want to do that with, you know, because you want consistency in that position. But nobody can see through an entire season at that intensity in central midfield. Like, that's just unrealistic.
Yeah,
at that age.
But that's why it frustrated me so much. We didn't get another central midfielder.
Yeah,
in the window. But like I've always said, you can't knock his achievements or what he's done. But I mean, if we fucking send him Sace to the care home, Tino can't be far behind.
Well, we might get a 2-for-1 or some kind of.
We're saying this after he's had a good game, man.
I know. No, he had a good game. Neves, fantastic again. You know, it looks like it's the partnership of we've got the Neves and Moutinho from when we qualified for the Europa League.
Yeah.
And reached the FA Cup semi final.
I don't know about you, but Neves, just with every single game, I just fall in love with him more and more. Like, he's just something else. I can't get on board with the haircut, the lack of a haircut, if I'm honest. But what a frigging footballer, man.
It's amazing what happens when the handbrakes took off. Nuno would have ruined some of them players. He would have ruined Traore. He would have ruined Neves. Probably 2 or 3 more. But he would have ruined Moutinho as well. But nah, seriously, he would have ruined Neves. He would have absolutely ruined him. But it feels like we've got the championship Neves back now. And I know that's really ironic because he played in the championship under Nuno. But, you know, it's a bit deeper than that. Obviously, the championship's a lower standard, so he can express himself a lot more and we could as a team as a whole. But it just feels like he's being released and he's just being told, you are absolutely fantastic at football. You know what you're doing. Just go and do it.
Yeah. I mean, Matt, I don't know about you, but Trincao, for me, getting better with every single game. Yeah, even though he came off on the hour, I still think this is probably his best appearance in a Wolves shirt.
Oh, yeah, without question. And it's nice that we've had this, maybe rightly, maybe wrongly, kind of feeling around the Wolves squad that it takes an unusual amount of time for someone to bed in, or it certainly did under Nuno, or at least be given the chance to play. And it's took him, you'd argue, 2.5 games or so for him to actually look like he's going to be someone that's offering a lot to this squad, and he'll be fighting and he'll be keeping people out of the squad. And it's a shame, actually, that the chance that he created completely for himself did kind of fizzle out and he didn't have enough power on it to really challenge the keeper, because it was deserving of something more than that. And it's a shame as well, because if he'd have had more power, you could see that Raul was teeing up for the rebound and he was ready to slot that one home as well, which is a great shame. But yeah, I mean, he's just showing, you know, we know that massive clubs like Barcelona buy players for fun and can't play them all the time. But there is a reason why someone plays for Barcelona and is signed by Barcelona in the first place. It's not by sheer dumb luck. There's a reason why, and we're reaping the benefits of it. And I just hope that long may it continue, because we will be the ones that get all the benefits from it.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, I feel like we're becoming a very complete side at the moment, and very exciting times. If I had to pin you down to a man of the match, Luke, who'd you choose?
Probably the boy Neves.
Yeah, for me. Might as well have bagged him for the first 4 games of the season, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Matt?
It probably would have to be Neves as well, to be honest, because it's just pulls the strings. It's everything that we wanted him to be. And controversial statement, I think he looks damn good with that Alice band or whatever he's wearing. I think that rugged devil may care hair does him the world of good. So Neves for me as well.
Have you also noticed that
he's seen him more than the hair?
Yeah. Have you noticed that he's taking less long shots as well? It feels like it to me, anyway.
I think that's
maybe that was a secret all along.
A response from Cody's abuse on Instagram. Did you see? Yeah.
That was good crack. To be fair, play to Connor Cody. We'll leave Watford behind on that note, guys, and take a quick break. After which, we will be previewing the Brentford game and talking about some other things around football as well. So don't go away.
Hi, Richard here. Before you go back to hearing us dissect the latest Wolves news, some really shoehorn Simpsons references, a bit of 90s film action, of course, a bit of wrestling, I just want to do a quick shout out for our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media. Now, they've done a fantastic job on the Wolves Fancast website, wolvesfancast.com. Please go check it out. But they're not just web designers, they're a creative agency that cover all your design needs, from websites, brochures and signage to marketing, logo design and branding. there's basically nothing they can't do marketing wise. So make sure you check them out at pixelyetimedia.com, and I'll let you get back to enjoying the show.
Welcome back, everybody. Now, before we move on to the Brentford preview, I just wanted to touch on something that, I mean, if, for those who aren't aware, we are recording in the aftermath of the Liverpool versus Leeds game and the horrific injury suffered by Harvey Elliott, who I'm sure we all wish, you know, the speediest recovery to. Horrendous ankle break, it seems. But some of the chatter within the Fancast WhatsApp group, and I feel like it's worth sharing some of the debates that we have. There's some good chat going in around that. But I don't know, my initial thoughts, and I feel like most people's initial thoughts on the situation were that Pascal Strouk made a good tackle. It was an unfortunate situation with the way he got injured. And then the subsequent red card, I mean, it was a brilliant game up until that point as well. It felt like that had a very big bearing on the way the rest of the game was going to play as well. And I just want to understand your thoughts on the kind of justice around that kind of situation. Obviously, it's a horrific injury, but Matt, start with you. Where's your head on that one?
So to comment on the decision itself, I don't think A, there's malice in the challenge, number one, and I don't think necessarily it was a bad or reckless challenge either. I think it's a freak accident that unfortunately has caused a horrendous and horrific injury. I think the issue there, there's two issues really. There's the pressure of the injury to the referee. So he sees someone in a heap on the floor, ankle flopping the way it shouldn't. Instinctively in his head, he's thinking something's gone amiss for this to happen. And two, I think the referees still don't have a full, not understanding, but aren't comfortable or aren't familiar yet with these rule changes around soft contact and giving away more in the game now. And I think a risk, you know, has the referee thought to himself, right, well, this obviously isn't soft contact. Something's had to have happened. I'm going to have to take appropriate action and I can be bailed out by VAR if it's wrong. And yeah, that's what's happened. But then the people at Stockley Park have also thought to themselves, maybe they're going through the same thing. And then we've had a series of events that has led to the red card. I think it's harsh. And I don't think it's the right decision. And unfortunately, no matter what you do with the game, you're always going to have decisions like this. There isn't ever going to be a resolution to this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Luke, he obviously initially didn't think it was even a foul because he didn't blow for a free kick or anything. So to then resort to a red card, having seen what he'd seen, it's not like it was behind his back or anything like that. He'd seen the tackle. He had his own viewpoint, I'm sure, on what happened. It felt a bit unjust, maybe, I think, from my perspective anyway.
I think the leg and what happened to the leg is what made the referee send him off, not the actual incident, which is slightly unfair, I think. Yes, we always want to protect the players, you know, because we don't want any footballer at any level receiving injuries like that. But sometimes in football and ultimately in life, these accidents do happen. And like Matt said, there's no malice in it. You know, I think 9 times out of 10, you can tell when somebody is meaning to hurt somebody or somebody is being reckless. And I don't think there's either of those in that tackle. It's just really, really unfortunate. You know, the ball's there to be won. The ref's not even felt that it's a free kick at the time he's played on, and he's got a good view of it. He's not too far away from it. And I do think then, obviously, he's seen his leg, how it went, and that's why he has sent him off, which is wrong, ultimately, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, a few minutes later in the game, Liam Cooper goes in to a tackle with Sadio Mane in pretty much exactly the same way, wins the ball again. Mane isn't injured in any way from that incident. But when you see that happen, what is your stance on this idea that retrospectively, based on an injury, you can actually go out and dish out that kind of punishment?
I think then do you say, should David Luiz have got sent off when that incident happened with Raul?
That feels like a parallel argument, yeah, 100%, I think, because I'd argue Luiz was probably more reckless even.
Yeah, 100%.
Than the way 100%. Pascal Strike actually went in to make the challenge.
100%. And yet he played the game.
Yeah, I think he got substituted though because he had his own kind of head trauma thing going on. But I guess the wording in the laws is about endangering an opponent. I mean, any tackle could be seen as potentially endangering an opponent, couldn't it?
Of course, when a keeper comes out to punch the ball, that could potentially be endangering.
I mean, there's complete. You can interpret that however you want. You both go up for a header and a player can land and snap his ankle. Mm-hmm. It's at no fault of the defender or the attacker or whoever's the one making the challenge. I mean, you can go in deep and make that as ridiculous a rule as you want it to be. I just think we have to accept it as what it is, and it's a freak injury.
Yeah.
And these things happen, and you know, there's more malice in other challenges that we've seen where, you know, when Van Dijk got clapped.
Did you see Tanganga's challenge on Zaha?
Oh my God, what was he even thinking?
It was like chest height. I don't know what he was doing.
What was he doing?
But that's a genuinely dangerous approach.
Yeah, that should have been a red card. And do you know what annoys me in situations like that one? How they both got booked. Now, Zaha, you can say, all right, well, they'll react. If somebody has literally just ran towards you and pushed you in the chest, you're going to react.
Yeah, they'd be right to react that way.
You're going to react. It's a simple.
He got a lot of shit because I think he's reacted inappropriately to other situations and got very angry.
But sometimes I look at Zaha. I love Zaha. I think he's an absolutely fantastic.
He's a brilliant
footballer.
He's a brilliant player.
If I'm getting kicked from pillar to post, and let's be honest, the reason that these defenders are kicking him because they do is because he's too skillful for them and they don't like it and they can't handle it. If I was being kicked the way he does, then I think I would react as well.
Because we've seen though that
I can't just go around kicking people.
There's a mandate. We saw it in the England Poland game. If there's a fracas, someone has to get carded from either side. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, you're right. It just the referee has to be seen to be doing something almost.
Going back to the incident today with Harvey Elliott, I think that especially because the refs had chance to then review it and look at it pitch side, the decision should have been free kick to Liverpool, yellow card. And then obviously have a conversation with him. I can see you haven't tried to hurt him, but maybe just try and.
The laws of the game. They won't interfere on whether it's a free kick or not because it's not a significant position on the pitch or anything, is it? It's only ever going to be if it's a red, if it's a penalty, you know, that kind of thing is the only time that VAR will actually interfere.
What would have happened if he didn't send him off?
You carry on as you are. I don't see why.
I bet somebody kicked the ball. No, because nobody kicked the ball out today.
No.
Long-contested drop ball from where it was in play.
I mean, I'm sure you can figure that out. That doesn't feel like a major issue to me. But bottom line, I mean, for a start, for the spectacle, it was a decent game up until that point. You know, it stays, you know, an even fixture where Leeds actually have a chance of getting back into the game. From that point onwards, it was a done deal. Through no real fault, you know, if he'd actually gone out to hurt him, you can understand, but they should be punished for that. But they've then been punished for a consequence rather than a, you know, an actual act. So, yeah, I thought it'd be an interesting debate to have anyway. And if you guys have got any thoughts, drop us a tweet on your opinions on the matter as well. And we're more than up for a Twitter debate of that kind at the Fancast. So moving on to the Brentford fixture. I don't know if you guys watched the highlights of Brentford's game against Brighton yesterday where they lost 1-0. Brentford were almost aping Brighton's games from last season, I think, based on the fact that they were the better side, they had the chances, and they were beaten in the last minute. So bit of an unknown quantity. A lot of their squad is what it was from the Championship. They haven't necessarily made a lot of signings. But I don't know how much you know about Brentford, Matt, but they seem to be going about their business quite nicely.
Well, me and Luke were talking about this pre-show about that Brentford, like a lot of promoted teams do, and promoted teams that haven't been able to flash the cash, although obviously it's a new signing in the fact that they've kept hold of Ivan Toney, is that they've just got a fearlessness, which I respect massively. In a, you know, coming into, maybe it's naivety, I don't know, but they've got a, they've got that swagger of the new kid on the block that comes in and is the unknown entity. And I do like to see that. And I hope for that reason that they do make a semi-success of this season at the expense of a team like Palace or, well, it, I mean, Norwich are gone already, four games in, let's be honest. But I hope it's at the expense of a team like Palace or a team like Southampton, who routinely want to become a aftermarket car salesman, because they'll just routinely ship their players out and not think of the consequences of it. I think Brentford, their exciting play and the way that they have no fear will unfortunately be their undoing, though, as we do see a lot of times also with promoted teams.
Yeah, they obviously have a real significant striker in Ivan Toney, who scored a hell of a lot of goals at Championship level. Looks the part, to be fair. I don't know if you saw the attempt from near halfway. Yeah. That would have been one of the best goals I think I'd ever seen if that went in. The way they built it up and then the way he hit it. Unbelievable. But do you think it could cause us some problems, knowing how good we are at the back now?
Ivan Toney is a fantastic striker. I'd love him at the Wolves. I really would. I think he's, again, he's powerful, he's big, he's athletic, he's quick, he's strong, he's intelligent, got good technique. He works hard as well for the team. You know, he's got a good defensive side to him. He's fantastic. You know, I like to watch him. I think they'll do all right this season. I can see him finishing anything from 15th. Upwards, I don't see them getting involved in a relegation battle.
No, okay.
No, I don't see it. I think they've got a good style. They've got a good identity as well. And like Matt said earlier, could it might be naivety, but that sort of new boy, I think they know what they are, they know who they are, and they pretty much say, we're Brentford, this is how we're going to play. We ain't going to change what we do or how we do it for anyone.
Yeah.
And I like that about them.
I mean, I don't necessarily think, say they did go down this season, it would be the end of the world for them. We've seen that they've made pretty good investments in terms of signings, the likes of Neil Mopai, Sy Benrahma. I think Chris Meppham went for quite a bit of money to Bournemouth as well. They're quite happy moving on their big hitters as and when the time comes. So
did they have Andre Gray as well?
Andre Gray,
Scott Hogan, when he was doing bits, and then he went, did he go Blues for like 15
mil? He went to Villa first.
For like 15 mil. So they've got a nice player. But they use like a money ball technique, don't they?
Yeah.
In their recruitment, it's all stats-based.
Yeah. The owner, a math guy called Matthew Benham, he's, I think he's a poker player by trade, professional poker player. And he does statistical models and everything based around running the football club. One of the most interesting decisions I think they made was they realised, based where they are in London, that their academy was worth nothing to them because all the big clubs were taking all the talent and they just binned it off. Yeah. So now they've got like an under-23s or a B team. So any academy dropouts from like under-18 level from the other London clubs, they might take a chance on some of them. I think Meppham was one that came through the system and ended up making them, probably 15 million quid. But the cost of running an academy, I can imagine, if you're not earning the dollar out of it, like say we managed to earn 3.5 million out of Owen Otisawi, just as an example, you know, we've had a bit of a success there. When you're adding up the cost and the balance sheets, it's a brave decision to make, but it's also quite a sensible one when you think about it.
I think it's, you mean this in the nicest way possible, but you're forward planning for relegation and you're forward planning for promotion either way, aren't you? You're securing yourself either way. If you're not having a major outlay, you're not riddling yourself with debt for a potential drop, and you're giving yourself a fighting chance of not being saddled and getting back up again and all the riches that that brings again. So I like that model. Like, I've got no issue with that. You know, you've got teams that completely the other side of it, like Villa, for example, who will squeeze every bit of FFP out of it as that they can. I know, obviously, with the sale of Grealish, that kind of flips that on its head a little bit. But, you know, should Villa ever go down, you'd expect them to be in massive, dire financial straits. So it's,
Villa,
it's an
interesting one. Villa are a massive club, though, and they have to go out and spend the money because they're going to finish, like, top six this season. That's what.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I heard a great take before I came on here when I was listening to the radio, and it was a Leeds fan and then another Leeds fan. And then another Leeds fan who were so confident that a top 10 finish would be a disappointment for them this season. They're really confident that they're gonna still do things in this season. And
so watch the first few games this season.
From what I've seen, they're anything but that at the moment. It, you know, it feels like a combination of all of that work that Bielsa's put in terms of, and by work, I don't mean tactical work, as in flogging a dead horse, is finally coming to its fruition. Well, because
they haven't improved their squad at all. That's the bottom line. They've signed a left back for quite a bit of money, but really everyone that's there was part of the squad last season. But kind of bringing it back to Brentford and the game, home fixture, lunchtime kickoff. I think we're on TV on that basis, aren't we? I mean, it's just exciting going back to Molineux to watch Bruno ball, isn't it?
Well, I'm missing this game.
Oh, Lukey boy.
Yeah, I know. The early kickoff's killed me. My lad's playing away. I think we're in Coventry.
You want to teach him young that that's not a good thing to do, play away?
What a double whammy that is.
But, you know, I don't mind. But I can see it being a good game. Now we're actually trying to play football, because they try and play football. You know, I think they've got they're quite entertaining.
Yeah.
But I hope and I do believe. See, I can't even look at Brentford, even if we're playing well, and think, yeah, we'll put these to the sword. But I just hope that we do have enough quality at home just to see them off. It's going to be a tight game.
Yeah. I'm end to end. But yeah, like you say, tight. I think the lack of top draw quality from Brentford will stop them from scoring too many goals. They might create a couple of chances, but I can't see them necessarily putting them away. And our job will be to make sure creating good chances rather than just the high volume that we've been doing at the moment. But if you had a prediction for me, Matt, where are you going?
Well, as much as I've said, I respect Brentford and I like what they're doing. I think they're in for an absolute pasting. I really do. And I think that win now will galvanise the squad so much. And I think everyone will just be counting down the days until this fixture. I really, really do. I think they're in for a 3-0 defeat for Brentford. And I also, I think Raul sees a huge whang in his rearview mirror. And I think he gets his first of the season as well.
That would be alarming, I think, to be fair.
Wouldn't it just?
Luke, where's your money this weekend?
I'm going to go for a professional 2-0 home victory.
Okay. Yeah, I'm feeling a 3-0 actually as well. Mm-hmm. I feel like they'll put up a good fight for a good hour or 70 minutes. The changes will come, whichever way they do. You know, whether we start the usual lineup and then change it, or vice versa, and then we'll pick them off a little bit after that. But looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing them. Ethan Pinnock actually as well. I think he's a really, really good player. Come through quite late. Would have taken him as a centre half option as well, I think. But should be a good game. Just before we move on to Twitter Corner, there's been references throughout the podcast. There's plenty of references out there on social media at the moment. But when do we stop talking about that bloke down at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium?
It's a difficult one because, you know, everybody's got friends that are still card-carrying paid members of the Cult of Nuno. and now, you know, we're always going to have that banter about it. And I still think for the moment, there is going to be a certain level of obsession, and there'll be people within the fan base, not discounting myself from this, that took delight at the fact that Spurs lost so convincingly.
And genuinely wallowing in that misery. People were.
Yeah, it's a really strange one. And I think, you know, it's just one of these, it's an X. And you know what? It's not just an X. Everyone, I'm looking around me, has got the X. You've got your X's, but you've got the X, and he's the X. And he's always...
the one you might actually go back in for, is that what you're saying, man?
Wow, you never know. You never know, mate. You never know, do you? But I think for now the wounds are still fresh. So it's culturally okay to still talk about Nuno.
Well, I mean, I feel like it should be he who must not be named now, or Commander Handbrake. Maybe that'll stick with us for the time being. But Luca, I mean, part of me wants to get the in-betweeners gif out every time, the beep 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 beep, that one when everyone mentions frigging Nuno now. So
I was buzzing when I saw the Tottenham result.
TL, man.
I was buzzing because, you know what? That one him out by before Christmas. He ain't gonna last there.
But are we really happy with that? Is that what we're saying?
Fucking, oh god. Do you know if he would have gone abroad? And he would have managed in Portugal, Spain, France, Germany, wherever. I would have been like, you know what? I hope Nuno does all right this season. But because he stayed in the Prem, why would I want Tottenham to do well anyway?
Yeah, if he got sacked, like, which is, I think, is basically what happened.
I think it would be hilarious.
No, what I'm saying is, I think he got sacked from the Wolves job.
Yeah, and rightly so, because he's tactically.
Yeah, but then, so why are you hating on him so much then? That's what I don't understand.
You know what I think it is.
Why? Okay, then let's put it this way, right? Why should I be happy for the manager of Tottenham Hotspur?
Not about being happy for him. I just don't understand why everyone's really excited and rubbing their hands about the fact that he's flopping.
Because it's funny. Because it's. Do you know what? I'm going to tell you why now. Let me get comfortable in my chair.
Here we fucking go. Let's ramp it up.
Last season, right, when I would maybe dare to say something negative about Nuno, because you couldn't, because he was the second coming of Jesus fucking Christ to some fans. But the happy clappers made your life a fucking misery. And now to just be able to say he was shit worry, because he was, because he's proven it at Tottenham. Zero shots on target before half time. Shock. Playing negative as fuck against us. Shock. Looking boring. Shock. No attacking threat. Shock. It's. I feel like he lied to us for 18 months. He lied to us for 18 months. Pulled the wool over our eyes. We had to sit through some of the worst football. It was so boring watching Wolves. Add on top of that fucking COVID and lockdown, so it's shit enough as it is. And you'd be like, oh my God, we've been in lockdown for 3 months. I assume fucking Dave, who I usually see in the pub for 6 months. At least the Wolves are on this weekend though. And then that'd be absolutely dog shit because of him. Because it will nothing to do with the players. It's all him. So that's why. Now I hope he does the same at Tottenham, because, and he will do the same at Tottenham. They'll want him out before Christmas. Fuck Nuno. But at the same time, I appreciate and I respect all the good work you did do for us. But it had come to an end. Sorry, I've gone on a right rant here. But what did it for me? Right, 3-2, down, at home, to the Albion, and he's sitting in the dugout like he's fucking waiting for his Chinese to be delivered.
The look he had on his face, I think, is about an hour late as well.
Exactly. He definitely left a 1-star review on Just Eat. But nah, that did it for me, that did. Because I thought, when playing the Albion for the first time in a decade, at home, when 3-2 down, they am absolute shite. And there's not one bit of emotion in you. But yet when Jota scored the winner against Leicester, you're running on the pitch in that. When we beat them 4-3. You're running on the pitch. But now you've got no emotion, and we're losing to the Albion. Nah, man.
The missus like has that. Literally just left the room. She's had enough, Lee.
Disgust.
She's had enough.
He loves Nuno. Kelf, you love Nuno, don't you? Yeah. She loves him. Can't stand him.
My missus is the same. My missus is the same.
It's hard, though. But for me, it's not a case of I relish the glee of Nuno losing. It's, it's, you know, love the man's achievements, what he did for the city, and I've spoke about how he gave the city an identity and all that good stuff. It's the cult of Nuno that do it for me. It's the reaction on social media, it's the loving, it's the South Bank singing his name after his team has beat us. It's all of that that comes with it that makes me just cringe and think, what's, you know, how's that any better than Pogba giving a home fan a shirt? So, you know, I just it makes me feel sick. Like, yeah. It's the cult of Nuno that annoys me. Well, the cult of Nuno.
I mean, I've already given this more airtime than I would have liked, frankly. So we're going to move on. And Matt, you're going to take us through Twitter Corner.
I am indeed. Let's move swiftly on. Soccer Neophytes podcast wants to know, do you think we could score more goals in a 4-4-2 with this squad? Or do you think we should just stick with a 3-4-3 and this exciting defensively stout lineup? I'm guessing by 3-4-3 means more of the kind of 5/3 hybrid that we play when we go and attack and defensive. But do you think that we'd score more in a 4-4-2? Or would that leave us more defensively exposed?
I think we would straight away allow teams to get closer to goal without playing the way we are at the moment. So that would concern me a bit. I don't think we've got a real problem yet with the way we're attacking. We've only had four games. One game that we really should be winning, and we did. The other three felt hard done by. So I think until January, I'll probably persist with the way we are until maybe we get a centre-half upgrade and maybe a central midfielder who can do a little bit of a different job for us as well.
Luke, what do you reckon?
It's a difficult one. But I think whilst it's working at the moment, I wouldn't touch it. And I think if you can get Raul, Trincao, Traore, Hwang all firing, then I don't think it matters what formation you play. We're going to get goals.
Potentially, yeah.
I think playing with the 3-4-3 as we're playing now might even help us out more going forward, as bad as that sounds, because especially Semedo, look how attacking he is. So at times you're attacking with Semedo, Traore, Jimenez, and Trincao on the left.
Fair enough.
He's encouraging Marcel to push on as well. Like, yeah, I mean, yeah. He was getting in the box at the back part. I wouldn't necessarily say he's the best player for that, but I mean, he's there.
KingWolf84 wants to know, noting Emre Raducanu's success, what was your biggest achievement at aged 18?
Probably not having a kid by then.
Mine's pretty embarrassing. The band I was in, we'd done the music for a TV program when I was like 19 or 20 or so. But by that point, we were on the Stoke 2004 end of season DVD.
As
the backing music for the entire DVD. Right.
Oh, fair play.
That's about as good as it gets by the time I was 18.
That's pretty good. I just turned 18, actually, and I spent 2 weeks training with a professional football club in India.
Which was
an amazing experience. Like, genuinely, it was really, really good. You had to live on site and stuff, and like a residential at the training ground. It was too hot to train during the day, so you had to get up at like 6 a.m, have your morning session, and then 6 p.m. for another session as well. And you basically just lived in each other's pockets as a squad. So, that was brilliant.
If they still exist, Gully, send them that clip of when you misjudged that header in the charity game and say, job well done.
Honestly, like...
That's going to be your everlasting
legacy. Really pisses me off the highlights in that game because defenders never get the hype, man. We just don't. I feel like fucking Max Kilman right now. He's only just been recognised. Yeah.
Have you got anything noticeable from when you were 18?
I think just the fact that I got through school was an achievement for me. And that's about as good as it got.
Luke, you went to St. Peter's, mate. You was all right, I'm sure.
Just about, mate. Straight through. Crawled over that finishing line, I did.
Linkswolf wants to know, and I've got a follow-up question to his question. Do you think we could get Ben Foster on the pod to talk about his special relationship with Wolves? It was nice to hear him acknowledged by our fans yesterday. But I want to ask a question. Has it gone the other way now with Ben Foster? Is it just the villain that we love to hate? And actually, in 10, 20 years' time, he'll do an evening at Molyneux and he'll talk about that relationship with the club. And actually, he'll end up turning the other way. And it won't be a fan favourite, but he'll just be respected and liked because of how much we hated him.
I actually don't mind Ben Foster. I watched some of the Cycling GK videos on YouTube. They're a good watch, to be fair. He's good value. Foster's the sort... Take out who he paid for a couple of seasons. But he seems like a good character to have around the dressing room. Seems like he'd be a good laugh.
He looks like he can give it and take it, to be fair to him, I think. And he's pretty fair game. Yeah, he ain't got a problem with that.
Yeah, the after dinner circuit is ripe for him, and I think that we'll see him at Molyneux more than he'll go to some other clubs and then tell his story about how he was booed to shit at every time that Wolves played a team he was with, and people are lapping up, to be honest. Finally, Tom Martin 5. Who will win more caps for England, Cody or Kilman?
Cody.
I think yeah. As long as Southgate's in the job, Cody's got a place there, hasn't he? And as long as England are getting drawn against Andorra or San Marino in qualifying groups, he's definitely got a game.
Did you ever see that film Bicentennial Man with Robin Williams, where a robot tries to convince a court of law that he's actually human? Until Max Kilman can do that, he's not getting in the England squad.
I'm pretty convinced he doesn't have a personality at all.
Exactly. So.
Have you ever seen his facial expression change?
No.
There was that clip on the train or the coach up or whatever when he's like... I know someone put a filter on it, but he's just like completely stoic, eating like jammy Dodgers or something.
He did celebrate a goal at Forest quite vociferously. I think that's the most I've seen from him. Yeah, yeah. I was there. I can say I was there the day Kilman celebrated a goal.
Broke the matrix.
Yeah.
Well, that's everything, guys, from Twitter Corner. Thank you very much for your questions. Hope that we can answer them in future and get anything off your chest. Doesn't have to necessarily be football related. So thank you very much for getting in touch with us.
And thank you for leading us through that, Matt. That brings us to the end of this week's episode. We'll have some more content coming at you throughout the week. We've got a GTA coming this week, looking back at the Watford game. So keep an eye out for that on our YouTube. We'll have a preview show as well for the Brentford game. And you feature Fancast Fridays, which I hope you're all enjoying. Got some great guests so far, likes of Tim Vigon, Miles Jacobson, amongst others. So, yeah, plenty coming from the Fancast. Just like to thank our sponsors, the Kings Mimford Sports Shop and Wolverhampton Eats. Thank you for supporting us. And we are part of the 90 Minute Football Network as well. So go and check out them. And... if that's everything, boys, good night, God bless, and look forward to Bruno Ball next week.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?